morning, Emily Wright.
Good morning, Sam McClary. How are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
I'm okay. I'm actually really tired. I'm so tired that people can't see, but these microphones have got sort of, what are these called, these things in front of them?
Well, doesn't our multimedia editor call them pop guards or something?
Guards,
yeah.
Pop guards. Okay. Well, they're sort of, you know, these discs in front of the microphone, and they've got little netting in them, and I feel like face planting it. I'm so tired.
It's like a little pillow for your microphone.
It's like a little pillow. Or my face.
Or your face.
But I won't, because, you know, I need to be awake for this.
Yeah, and it would muffle the sound, so.
Yeah, that's true.
Although listeners might appreciate that. So.
That passed me by. I just got it. That's really mean.
That's how tired you are.
Yeah.
This next interview is quite long, I must admit. It's for about 45 minutes. But kind of, you know, one of those interviews where you get lost in time and you're just having a really good chat. Here at EG revealed yesterday that there is a new AI in town, and it is a AI called Lisa. Lisa's been around since December 2006 or from 2006, but she has some new capabilities, some new skills, her new capabilities are that she can produce leases targeted at the small and medium-sized private landlord, your man on the street who wants to either take a room in a house, does lodging documents as well as leases, or it could be, you know, those guys out there, our startup audience, who just want to take a short lease in a building from a private landlord. And it was really interesting, actually, because apparently only 1 in 10 people use a lawyer for lease services, because they just can't afford a human lawyer. So Lisa, this AI, is aiming to sort of fill that gap. Apologies, I just played with the table. She is trying to open up that market to that 90% of people that can't afford human lawyer fees. So we had Chrissy Lightfoot, who is the co-founder of Robot Lawyer Lisa, come in to talk to us after the launch of that yesterday. So I talked to her a little bit about, one, why she called it Lisa. It doesn't stand for, I thought it could be Lisa as in leases, but no. It is an acronym.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the right word?
It is.
But it's
it depends what it is. Yeah. Like the first letters stand for something else.
Okay. Yeah. But it's also Steve Jobs's daughter's name. And Steve Jobs, as we know, wanted to put a communication tool in the hands of everyone. And that's what Chrissy wants to do. So here she is talking about what an acronym is and how Lisa is.
Sorry, do you call it an
acronym?
Are you saying an new word acronym?
No, an acronym. One word.
No,
acronym.
It's just an acronym. It's not an acronym.
Oh, this is malaprop here.
That's maybe the funniest thing that's ever happened on this podcast. I said that when you said. An acronym. Is that the word? And I thought you were saying...
An acronym. An acronym.
Yeah, but it's an new word.
Yes.
Acronym.
Yes.
It's not an acronym.
No. I don't know what I'm saying anymore. Anyway, just listen to Chrissy.
My name is Chrissy Lightfoot, and I'm the CEO of Robot Lawyer Lisa. Robot Lawyer Lisa is the world's first impartial AI lawyer. We formed the company only a little over a year ago, officially launched in April this year. And I've had a lot of interest on our first tool, which is a simple NDA. But the release yesterday was exciting because it was the next step, having learned from our users and our customers, is what they would actually look for next. So the property tools were the suggested next step, really, from our users for a number of reasons. So it was great to actually finally get them out there after all this time in build time as well.
So the next step is leases, and I did the name Lisa become before leases?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
It works quite well.
It does, but sometimes my tongue trips over itself when I'm trying to define Lisa, not leases or whatever, but... Yes, Lisa actually stands for Legal Intelligence Support Assistant. Okay. And we came up with that name because, obviously for the acronym, but also Steve Jobs' daughter was called Lisa, and his great vision was to put a communication device in the hands of everybody in the world so that we could relate. And similarly, our vision for Lisa is to make sure that everybody in the world get access to quality, insightful, nuanced legal services. So we thought we need to have a name that has a good story to it and a meaning.
Mm.
So the leases side of things, so the commercial lease, obviously they're sometimes known as business leases as well, and the residential lease, which is commonly known as the short-term tenancy agreement, and also a lodger agreement, so the three property tools. We decided to roll those out because it fits naturally with the way that people are going to live and work in the next decade. So we looked at those trends. It wasn't just, you know, we thought, why are people asking us for these? And it tended to be kind of like the private landlords or tenants and the students who are moving around a lot. And we thought, well, we really need to make a tool available that makes it convenient and cost effective and timely for them to actually get these kind of tools, because 1 in 10 people, businesses and consumers, do not use solicitors.
Hmm.
And they don't use them because usually price point is the main thing. And the other two that I just mentioned.
And so if I was a private landlord, mm-hmm. and Lisa wasn't available and I had to use a solicitor in the traditional way, what could I expect to be paying out for that? And by using Lisa, how dramatically does that bring that cost down?
Well, it's huge. I will disclose what our model is, because obviously I want to make it available for consumers and business people to realise how to get hold of these leases. Well, the answer to your question is most commercial property solicitors charge anywhere between £1,500 to anything north of £20,000 just for one commercial lease.
Wow.
So the landlord will pay that, but then also on the other side, the tenant needs to go to his or her solicitor to look over the agreement as well. And sometimes the tenant actually, it costs them more because it's the issues that they're not too comfortable with signing what the landlord's demands are. So in essence, the way we built Lisa, though, with these leases, is that it negates the use of both lawyers, because literally the landlord and the tenant create the document themselves, because we've put on the AI platform. It's already knowledge engineered with a human lawyer's brain. And in that system, as they work through the questions and the answers, and obviously you have to ask the right questions to get the right answers,
yeah.
We've built in not just the legal issues that the landlord and the tenant need to consider, but also the commercial nuances. And the particular property solicitor that dumped his brain into these apps, we chose him in particular because he's got 30 years of experience in actually owning properties himself. And actually knowing that you have to go and look at a property in order to know what questions to ask, because unbeknown to a lot of landlords and tenants, some of the solicitors they actually instruct don't even go and look at the property.
Hmm.
So they're drafting a lease from a document as such where they don't know the nuances of the building itself, whereas because we've created the environment where the landlord and the tenant are most likely seeing the property, then the questions and how they answer them, they're more likely to get them absolutely right and detailed so that they've got a formidable document by the end of it.
And can you talk us through, because I think it's really interesting that, you know, sort of the human element of an AI, and that an AI is only as powerful as the information that goes into it. And I think there's, you know, oftentimes as we're getting comfortable with tech, I think the fear is going away, but there's still that fear. It's like, well, there's this AI and it doesn't need me anymore. But of course it needs you, because you need to put that information in there. How does that actually happen?
Yeah, I mean, yes, you're absolutely right in that respect, because all of the reports shown recently, I mean, I've read a lot from PwC, Deloitte, the SRA, Unibond as well. Lots of reports that are looking at the public's perception of AI and will we trust it? And there is a match between people who use forms of AI, and when they understand it's how they're using it in their phones or their fridges and looking after temperature in buildings and all the rest of it, And that first third actually say, look, I trust AI because I realise I'm using it in everyday life, not just business. So that first third are quite comfortable and will use a robot lawyer like Lisa quite comfortably. Hence, that's why Lisa's been successful with the first tool, the NDAs, and we're confident that these are the people who will use the property tools. The other two, the middle third, say, yes, we would trust technology to an extent, but we still want the warm fuzzies. We still want the human lawyer touch. We still want the human estate agent. Because that second third, they need the comfort and the support into the insurance because professionals are insured, of course. Mm. So what we've done is built into Lisa that support network. So not only do they have access to the human lawyer that's actually done the brain dump with the tool, but we've got a network of solicitors and barristers on the portal as well for access to make it convenient for the users of the Lisa tools as well. But that final third, yes, through time, they say, no, absolutely not, won't touch robot lawyers, robot tax advisors, robot mortgage advisors. We'll wait and see. But in time, I'm confident that those will tip. It's just like people using the internet and giving credit cards over and trusting that. Yeah. So it's about providing the and, not the or, because our main vision and mission is really about use technology in the first instance because it's here now, whether it's cognitive computing, chatbots, AI platforms, more sophisticated machine learning, robot process automation or whatever. So it's all scary terminology, but in effect, it's really about mimicking what a human can do. Mm. And what we've just tried to do at least was say, look, let the machine mimic as much as possible. And if you do need a recourse or resource such as a human, it's there as well. It's really your choice. It's about expanding the choice available to consumers and business people.
There's been quite a lot of the people that we've talked to here at EG say, you know, that's the thing. People still want someone to blame if something goes wrong. That we were chatting with a chap about blockchain and you know, if that's really going to take off, is there still someone for someone to blame? You know, it might take out the middleman, but we like the middleman because it can be their fault. And having real people that you can go to, I think, maybe that makes people more comfortable that, you know, if God forbid things do go wrong, at least they can point the finger.
Yes, of course. And I have to explain to people what it means by if we do get any queries, you know, it's usually about regulation or insurance. And we say, obviously, as a company, AI Tech Support Limited Trading as Robot Lisa, we are insured. So the products that we are putting out there, we are holding ourselves responsible and accountable if they are defective products. We're hoping that we've done a fantastic job and the human lawyers have done a fantastic job. And obviously we have an agreement with the human lawyers that have done this because obviously our company is insured. So at the first point of call, if anybody has a problem, says this document is faulty, the law is wrong within it, then we say, okay, hold our hands up. And then we say to the human lawyer, is this wrong? Is it, you know, and they will say yes or no. And we will look to them. They're insured because they're regulated under the Solicitors Regulation Authority. They have their practicing certificates, so we're always using the human lawyers who are actually certified with at least 20, 25, 30 years of experience as well, and they are sat under a regulated body such as a law firm anyway. So, you know, to give our users comfort, we say we've got complete transparency of how this works, you've got complete route to us and the human lawyer as well. And I've actually sat with the SRA and explained how Lisa works, and they said, absolutely no problem. It's great because you're opening up the latent legal market for those that really need these kind of services. And the way it does work, a lot of consumers and business don't fully understand that you can provide legal services as long as they are what are classed as non-reserved activities. Mm-hmm. So these tools that we've created through Lisa, they're the short form lease, so it's nothing that's beyond 10 or 20 years. It tends to be pre-5.
Nobody wants beyond 10 or 20 years anymore either, do
exactly.
They?
The average lease now is down between 3 to 5. Mm. So we've built the tools to match what people in business and consumers are looking for. That kind of data and intelligence is going to be important, even if it's anonymized going forward, that will help institutions make some informed decisions relative to postcodes and the amount of rent and all that kind of thing. So we can see that Lisa doesn't need data input. It's got human knowledge and human experience elicitation that's gone into the system. But what will come out of this system is new data that's relevant for how we work and live that's going to be useful to a lot of different institutions going forward.
And is that something that you also plan to use as a product? I guess that intelligence that you get out of the AI that you can then package to inform people on trends and things like that. Because I think when it comes to tech and data, that's where the real interest is, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
What can I learn? What can I take from this?
Yes, because, I mean, we want it to be useful for, once again, for the benefit to go back to the public and in one way or another. To make informed decisions, which is the important thing. It certainly isn't our modus operandi of why we set out on this whole journey. Our main mission, as I say, is to try to service the 90%, the 1 in 10 business people and consumers have never had access to this kind of legal service, and because this technology is perfectly possible now. So in a way, what we're trying to do is it's a social enterprise good. And the way we're doing it is saying we're not going to go down the normal models of expecting people to pay for it directly themselves. And that's because there's plenty of providers out there where you can go and get template document automation kind of products. This isn't the same as that. It's not pure document automation. It's not template. It is knowledge engineered from the base, and it is every one of them is unique and bespoke, created by the users, which is quite different. And, you know, to go forward from that, what we're really wanting to do is just to empower and enable the users more so. So the outcome of actually getting data from it certainly isn't our goal. You know, the goal is really to continue with that, creating the tools with our partners and clients who are then wanting to say, look, basically we will use these tools as a value add from our existing proposition, because they come to us as an estate agent for our advisory capacity and finding the properties. But this is something that we know is going to save our landlords or tenants, whomever they represent, a lot of time, because we all know that when lawyers get involved, the reason that deals don't get done, if it's transactional, tends to be because it's getting the finance in place, and then it's how long the lawyers are taking between themselves. So if we can cut out the legal and the lawyer side of things, these kind of lease arrangements could be turned down within a day. I mean, you could work through the system in an hour. You know, it's not as if it's sat on a lawyer's desk and waiting 3 or 4 days because he's too busy and he's got to, or he's on holiday or sick or whatever. And the lawyers playing the game where they're blaming the other side and what have you. So the beauty with Lisa is everything's transparent. So there's no fibs or lies being told. There's no lawyer involved, and the landlord and tenant are totally aware of the legal and the commercial issues, the major issues that they need to consider between themselves. So they get to that middle ground a lot quicker.
So, there's no denying there is in that sort of private landlord sphere, be it commercial or resi, there is a public perception that of, you know, sort of dodgy landlords, be that whether that's true or not. Is there a hope that Lisa can actually help with that perception?
Yeah, absolutely, because once again, all of the guidance, the notes, the advice that we've imbued into the system is transparent, so the tenant is fully aware of that. So all of the legal rules and the commercial things to be considered, so the tax implications or whatever, is there for both sides to read and see and make an informed decision on. So therefore, they, when they answer the questions themselves, even if the landlord initiated the contract, the lease to begin with, and by the time the tenant sees it, the tenant gets to see all of that advice as well. So they are empowered with, as if they've got two human lawyers working for them, you know, the guy on the other side as well as their own. And then they can make a really informed decision of how to answer that question that's in the best interests. Because really both the landlord and the tenant want it to go ahead. You know, the landlord wants them in as quickly as possible so he starts getting his rent, and the tenant wants his, you know, best office ever that I've ever had in my dream office kind of thing, and then I can start trading and I can start making money. So it's not in either of their interests to stall it, because then they can compromise knowing what the legal situation is and the commercial of what you're both looking for. So we were quite pleased of how we've seen the tool work in operation. You know, we are in pilot stage as such with one or two at the moment, so it's very early stage, because obviously we did beta test the product before they're going to go out there. We've had some really great feedback, you know, because it's robust, it's quick, it's, you know, it's sound, it's legally sound and all the rest of it. And this is just a case of rolling it out and doing the use cases and doing the business case and then more pilots and then scaling, basically. Okay. And putting those right partnerships in place, actually.
And how does it actually work? If I'm either the landlord or the prospective tenant, how do I use Lisa?
Yeah, at the moment, well, like I say, it will be available through our partners and clients, which we will disclose at a later time. At this point in time, although we've launched the tools and built them, they're available for demo.
Right.
So basically, they would go onto the robotlawyerlisa.com website, look at the property tools section, all three of them are there. But the way, you know, obviously when I take them through the demo and when they start using for themselves and through our agents and partners and clients, all that really happens is you start on a process. It sits in the cloud on an AI platform. It is a series of steps, as in questions, mm-hmm. and all of the information at each step is there in order to guide the say it's the landlord that initiates and talks through what it means and the legal implications. You get all the way through after you've done all of that, so you get the guidance, the pop-ups, the advice as you go. When you get to the end, you see the draft lease, whether it's the commercial or the residential or the lodge agreement. And then you check that, and if you're happy with it, if you're not, you go back and you change it. So, you know, you could stay in the system a long time until you're absolutely happy with what you send on. You'll send it on via an email to your recipient, so the prospective tenant or the lodger. They get an email that says, basically, you, Sam, as the landlord, have sent them this document. Here's it attached as well, so you can see it in a PDF draft, mm-hmm. and you've also got some guidance notes attached there as well to explain all of the nuances of what's being put in there, the pertinent clauses that make a difference where you know that the tenant or the landlord are going to argue over particular issues, mm. okay, that do cause the disputes and the claims and later on the line as well. And then basically the receiver, if it's a tenant in this instance, is actually asked, if you're happy with it, by all means, you can go back to Sam and you can sign it all off, and we give all of the execution, how to execute it properly. But if not, and you're not happy because you want to change a load of things, click here, you go back into Lisa. So you go back into the same system at the same point, hmm. and you go through the process yourself, and you can change everything. So you're recreating and revisiting and revising that initial document that the landlord's done. So you can adjust anything. So the main stuff, you know, length of the lease or whether or not refurbishment needs to be done, or the painting or whatever, or access to parking, all that kind of stuff. So you can make all those changes, and then when you've done the same thing, you check it all off, you get the same guidance and support and advice, so you can read what the landlord will be thinking and what you should be thinking. And then if you're thinking, well, I need to get that middle ground because I need to compromise a bit, I'll just go back with that because I know it's going to be acceptable. And then you send it back to the initiator, the landlord, and they get a Word document, and so do you. So both the landlord and the tenant get the draft document at each stage. Because then at that point, it's to answer your question you said earlier, sometimes both or one of them needs the warm fuzzy. They need to go to the human solicitor. Mm. Okay, so at that point, they've got a document that's probably, some people think, I'm happy with it 100%. Others will say, I'm happy with it 95%, but I'm going to go to the human solicitor now just to top and tail it, just to make sure. Mm-hmm. And that human solicitor will say, okay, that's great. It's a pretty good document. It's almost there, but I see what you mean. I'll just alter this clause a little bit or whatever. But because it's in a Word document that we've given the user, it means that they've got a pretty damn good lease at that point in time. And they've probably saved, like you say, if it's a commercial lease, each of them probably saved about £10,000 up to that point.
Wow.
So when they go to a human solicitor, he might say, look, I'm going to spend 2 or 3 hours on this. And they may charge anywhere between £300 if it's £100 an hour, or £3,000 if it's £1,000 an hour on the magic circle. So in that respect, it just means that both of them have got that lease to a point where they can really, within a matter of a day or two, should be able to get it turned around, signed off, and off they go.
And are you finding, and I know before the big launch, obviously the sample is probably quite small, but are you finding that because it's such an open system and you can see and understand what each party is thinking, that that compromise comes a lot quicker, and that there's less changes between landlord wants this and tenant wants that, and they're getting there a lot quicker?
Correct. Yeah, absolutely. And that's the point, because, as I said earlier, people want to get the deal done. It's in their interest, both sides, because certainly on the commercial lease side, landlord, it's a good value for a lease of commercial property at this point in time. But from the tenant's point of view, they want to get on with their business. They want to start trading. And any delay that's, you know, causing that is frustrating. So, you know, taking that frustration out of it is essential. But even a residential lease, people have to move quickly sometimes with families and get started at school, and something's dropped out and they've lost one and they need another one. And you can't be losing a month or 2 months because of solicitors messing around, basically. Mm. And by all means, I'm not bad-mouthing the profession, because I used to be a corporate solicitor myself. But we know what goes on, and that is, it's an essential part of the chain that needs tightening up. And we feel that these are the solutions that do, because it does empower the landlord and the tenant, and it is totally transparent, it's impartial, it's unbiased, it's objective. It's got everything in it that should help those two parties make those decisions and come to that middle ground as quickly as possible. I mean, if you have a belligerent landlord or a tenant just being awkward, one of them's going to walk away anyway.
Yep.
Especially if they've been empowered with the knowledge where, you know, if they're just being awkward. And if that's the case, they just obviously don't want the building. They just don't want the unit, and they're just, you know, playing hardball and trying to push the landlord too far, or vice versa.
Mm.
So, but I think the middle ground is where most people want to get to, whether you're talking about renting property or whether you're talking about doing a joint venture with a business. It doesn't really matter what it is. What has been lacking from human solicitors, because they can only look after one side, because obviously the code of conduct and ethics are, you know, human lawyers can only act for one client. They can't act for both sides for obvious reasons. I think, you know, the fact that a machine can act for both sides and relay all of the information that both sides really need to see. So it is lifting that cloak, you know, lifting the veil.
Mm.
You know, it's kind of like a eureka moment for both sides, because if you've always been a landlord and never a tenant, you've never stood in the shoes of the other side and really empathised as to what are the sticking points.
Mm.
And over time, you get to know what they are and where you're willing to compromise. So I think if you've got a real green landlord who has bought a couple of properties as part of their pensions or whatever, I think if they already have a lot of knowledge to help them get to that middle ground, and then they still feel they need to go to a human solicitor, at least they're going to go and sit in front of that solicitor well informed.
Mm.
And that's something that a lot of landlords and or tenants have never really had before.
And how has the response been from the legal community if you know, it's a product that essentially takes them out of the equation? Are they happy to allow that?
Two schools of thought, like everything. Some lawyers get it. They say, look, for basic legal documents, even, you know, something as good as a lease that's worth thousands, you know, if we thought about how we use our time and where the real value work is, we would prefer to be doing more high-end transactional work that's worth anything north of £30,000 to £100,000 every time. So, you know, most lawyers would think I'd prefer to do six or seven deals like that a year rather than do lots of small stuff. But what I would say is that just rolling it back to where we started about who it is that we're really wanting to help. The solicitors and the law firms right now only look after 10%, you know, and they have had this opportunity to use this technology like we are to actually serve these new clients in a new and inventive and imaginative way. So we see it as, well, we're not taking away anything you've never had, because you've never served the other 90% anyway. So we looked at it from that perspective. But also what is happening, because
you snooze, you lose kind of situation.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and some of them, they will start to follow and copy or do things in a slightly different way to fit their business model, which is the right way to go, of course. So there's definitely that aspect of it. Sorry, you comment about
Whether they are whether the lawyers are appreciating it, or whether they're in arms and sending you death threats.
Well, put it this way, I don't tweet where my location is at the moment, just in case, so I can't be tracked. There is the aspect of the lawyers that think, oh no, they're taking away some of our work. So even like a basic NDA, you know, with that mindset, you're thinking, crikey, you know, and even a lease as such. But like I say, we said no. You know, you need to be concerned. If you're just focusing on your 10%, carry on and do what you've always done, okay? We're looking at this 90%, so we're going to start serving those that you've never looked after. And the reason that a lot of them don't anyway is that still, the average salary in the UK is still only £26,000.
Mm-hmm.
And the amount of money that people have left as luxury money after the normal day-to-day living and holidays and what have you is about £300. So even where there's other legal product out there where there's the automated documents or the template documents, even that PwC have out there now, actually, they charge anywhere between £75 to £700 for templated documents.
Hmm.
Okay, and that's a lot of money. So you're still not going to capture a lot of the 90% of the market. So how do you reach them? Well, we think with our model, it is a case of developing the tools and then surfacing them through our partners as part of a customer benefit package or an employee benefit package, because those customers are going to those companies for a particular service anyway, which is part of their spend. So they're getting something for free or as part of that package. And we believe that that would be the way in order to reach that other 90% through these particular distribution channels. So say if it's a bank or an insurance company or a big real estate institution that's looking after some of its investors, and the private rental market as well, that are coming through them and how they do it. So it's just a new way. And the way Lisa works is, as we've already said, some of those lawyers are actually getting the idea around the head and thinking, yeah, because if you start opening up that 90%, Chrissy, through the company as such, two solicitors are always required for each side of the landlord and the tenant. Some of them might use the lawyer that's done the brain dump on the tool, but a lot of them won't. Some of them will use their local solicitor, and some of them will use the solicitors on the referral system that they have already got set up throughout their professional verticals or whatever. So in essence, what happens is that second third, where they do want the warm fuzzies and the human lawyer, Lisa is actually creating two sets of new pieces of legal work of 90% of the market that's never been serviced before. So we actually think that Lisa is going to start to increase the size of the legal spend, the legal market. So, you know, now it's billions, it's going to go into trillions, because people, the public, consumers and business people are going to have more access to technological tools in the first instance. Those that need the human support will start using human solicitors that they've never used before. Hmm. Everybody wins.
Sounds too good to be true.
It's like chocolate.
That's definitely just true that it's good. And in terms of sort of client base, I know you've said, you know, sort of the private landlord, the man on the street who wants to lease space or lodger. I think that, I mean, there's this whole growth market in real estate at the moment where we're seeing obviously the private rented sector in residential, where some of the you know, the big institutions are ploughing billions into developing flats for generation rent to rent, because they obviously can't afford to buy houses. So there's that whole market that, you know, might need these kind of leases or agreements. And then there's the potentially even bigger trend of workplace as a service. Your friend and mine, obviously Mr. Slumbers, has has a lot of thoughts on space as a service. And do you see that Lisa could grow into being used maybe by the bigger corporates, by a WeWork wanting to deal with its you know, sort of smaller tenants, or a Regus, etc.?
It's certainly relevant where there is a bargaining power and a negotiation and a persuasion to be had, without a doubt, because obviously some of the big corporates have their set terms, and that's it. You either accept them or you don't. So, you know, in this instance, I mean, it could be used for that, but it isn't. At least it's built in a way in order to have that transparency to give both sides an equal and level playing field in order to make those negotiations, so that both sides benefit and everybody's happy with the deal, basically. So the answer to that is yes, and you're absolutely right. Regarding the statistics and the opportunity, we do know that within the next decade, from the reports that have come out, I think the latest thing I read was the people aged 19 to 39, 60% of that population group by 2025 are going to be renting. Hence, you know, we developed these tools knowing that that population group that are probably on those kind of salaries, the average salary or whatever, aren't going to be able to afford the going rate of a human solicitor anyway. So, you know, that big, huge, that 60% of that 90%, hopefully we're hoping that we're going to be delivering a service that is going to be really needed, wanted, desired, and used effectively. And similarly with lodging, I was quite surprised when I did the work and the research on it. Since 2019, the amount of lodgers has doubled.
Wow.
That's a lot. And the other striking one was the average age of a lodger is 31. So that tells you something about how people are moving around to work as well. It's also a tantamount of the divorce rate when people getting married earlier. Somebody ends up in lodgings or renting when somebody has to leave the family home.
When there's a robot lawyer for divorce, robot divorce lawyer, then we know it's a... I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
Funny you should say that. But there is another one on the horizon. And there are mediation and arbitration kind of automated machine systems out there right now. But yes, I mean, all areas of law are susceptible, and there's, I think the latest count was about 750 legal tech companies, where, as in, a lot of legal tech companies actually serve lawyers and law firms for solutions for helping them do things the way they've always done in their existing business models. But there's the other side, or the other handful, like our company, that says, no, we're not building legal service product to help lawyers and law firms, we're helping users go direct to cut out the human lawyer in the first instance. They can choose to go to them in the second instance. But this is about matching all of the other trends that say a lot of people want to self-help, self-serve. They want to look at the disaggregation of these legal services, and if they can do as much for themselves as possible, as cheaply and quickly as possible, they're going to use that first. So we tend to sit in that camp more so.
And tell us a little bit about you, about your background. Have you always been interested in tech? You know, you obviously started as a lawyer, as one of those people.
One of those people.
where you know, where did the idea to develop Lisa suddenly spring from? And you know, what drives you now to keep developing that?
Okay, it goes back to my childhood. I'll tell you a quick story. I'm penny a brick, okay? When I was a child, I you could probably tell from my accent, I hail from the northeast. My father was an accountant, and he said to the family, I have a brother and my mom, and he said, look, he said, we're going to buy a house up in Sedgefield, so we're going to upstick. So we sold the bungalow in Darlington, and he bought a piece of land with a broken-down farmhouse on it. And he said, right, you two kiddies, he said, what we're going to do is we're going to reuse these bricks. So you're going to chip the mortar off these bricks to build the new house. So we spent all summer doing this. And he said, look, he said, if you do it, I'll give you a penny a brick. So it was quite enterprising at that stage. Mm. And so we spent all summer. Mind you, I did learn some new swear words that summer because my brother and I went out every morning trying to pick the best chisel. So it was a fight and a scrap and swearing every day. But eventually we had this huge pile of bricks at the end of it. And then we went cap in hand to Dad and said, look, Dad, okay, job's done. Pay us our money. And he said, there you go. And he handed £5 to us. And we'd worked out that we were entitled to £10, £5 each. And he said, no, I'm sorry. He said, I said a penny a brick and there's 2 years, so it's half the amount. And we just looked at each other. To this day, he never paid us the difference. But he said, that's a harsh lesson, kiddies, because, you know, it's a verbal agreement. You should always get things in writing and all the rest of it. So it set me off on my little train, even at a young age, because quite shockingly, I was 6 years old and my brother was eight. But from that point on, I was quite enterprising and entrepreneurial, thinking, okay, you know, if you don't work hard, you don't get something. But you've got to make sure that, you know, it's one of those things where you're thinking, you need to actually be independent, and to survive, you've got to be pretty sharp as well. And you've always got to be looking ahead and all the rest of it. So that started my whole, in my teens, I started to look and read books about the future and about having the right skill sets and a portfolio of skills in order to survive and how to future-proof your career and your job. So throughout my whole life, I've always been looking 5, 10, 15, 20 years ahead. So to answer your question of, have I always been into technology? No, absolutely not. You know, I'm not a geek, I'm not a technologist. What I do is I look at opportunity, you know, and the portfolio of skills that I've amassed over the last 30 years, what I try to do is make sure that myself as an individual had a portfolio of skills in order to turn a hand at any kind of role or job or career. So, you know, learning marketing skills, sales, PR, operations, accountancy. My father's accountant, so, you know, understood figures pretty well. And the thing that was missing is a good business person, because throughout the majority of my career, I've just been in business for myself. Mm. I have worked for one or two companies, but apart from that, I've been self-employed and a business person. And I just thought that without really understanding the legals properly, and rather than being blindsided by lawyers, I really want to understand law. And I was constantly frustrated as an entrepreneur and a businesswoman myself as to how I was treated by lawyers and the price and all the rest of it. I thought, crikey, you know, these guys are charging, you know, £1,500 a day and I pay my designers £1,500 a month. There's something wrong with the system. Mm. Something needs to break. So I decided to train as a solicitor in my 30s to move into the legal world, to go, you know, naked, as I call it, and and you know, go amongst them, as you would say, Sam, just to understand why from the other side they felt you should be charging X and why service was like Z and it should be A star. And it's, you know, because of their own training and their behaviors and what have you. And when I worked as a solicitor, I could spot where things should be improved, how things could be made better. So throughout my career, I've always been looking at how to improve things, how to make things better. And I also knew that a lot of these services could be done online. And this was like 15, 20 years ago. So I wanted to get inside to see how it could be done and to explore that. And then I made the next step and I thought, right, I've spotted it. Because partway through when I was trained to be a solicitor and we hit the recession, I thought, there's a model here, how to market, brand, sell you, that professions and all of us need to future-proof our careers because the machines are coming within the next 10 years. So this was back in 2008. I thought, in the next 5, 10 years, it's going to all start to happen. So I wrote a couple of books, Naked Lawyer, How to Market, Brand, Sell You. Then the second one, which is all about the impact of AI and robots on society, law, the economy, back in 2014. So I've actually worked behind the scenes and as an advisor and a consultant to some of the academic institutions and what have you. Because I've always been concerned with the type of service really is what it comes down to. Client service and being truly client-centric. A lot of law firms and lawyers have actually struggled with that. But then I saw technology as a real solution. Mm. Now that this technology has come around, if it's used in the right way, it shouldn't be used just internally to solve business process problems. It's not about that. It's more about how do you reinvent or reimagine and using this technology to open up that latent legal market. So I set off on this journey because in the last 10 years, once I stepped out of being a corporate solicitor, I became a legal future to say, look, this is what is going to happen. These are the kind of things you need to consider. And I wasn't just working with the lawyers and law firms. I was working with the technology companies that were trying to get in front of the law firms to say, this is what's really special, and these are the use cases or the business cases, and this is how it will benefit you as a firm, but also your clients. So I was bridging that gap between the law firm and the technology companies. And because of that experience, I could understand what Watson was capable of doing, IBM Watson and Raven and Kira Luminance and Rainbow and Neota Logic, that the other side of things where you're looking at reasoning and logic. Mm. So whether you need systems that are all about data and data hungry, or whether you need systems that are expert systems that are knowledge and experience elicitation hungry. And I found that whilst I was trying to help both of those parties, there's no way the lawyers or the law firms were going to do what Lisa did. Because that was too far removed to make a next step to take two sets of lawyers out of the equation. And I just came up with the idea. I thought, how do I feel as a buyer and a user? What would I want? And I started asking a few people. I said, look, when you think about it, we all want to get to the middle ground as quickly as possible. We all know that if we can get something cheap, free, of real quality, that's insightful and nuanced, we would choose it first if we could, if we trusted it. So can we develop a system and the products that would actually do that? And then the journey started just over 12 months ago, and here I am.
Here you are.
And, but let me stress, it's not from, you know, it's a full team of people. You know, I have a partner in London, a corporate sister, where we have the boutique firm on the side. So we founded this together. There's three other investors involved. So there's five investors. And we're on the journey now. And we have a disparate team around us through the media agency and web developers that aren't just in the UK, but in Brazil and around. So we have a full team of people working on this to bring new product and new partnerships to the table as well.
And are you excited and positive about the future? Do you think, because it seems that we're a world now where there are more entrepreneurs than there are people, and you know, perhaps that's because it is tech enabled, that are thinking, you know, what would I like rather than what should I do for, you know, the big corporate, and and they're breaking out and coming up with products like Lisa. What view of the world does that give you?
I personally think it's a really positive thing. Because the reality is a lot of corporates are letting their human resource go. Some are letting them go, and some are choosing to go as well because they're tired of working in ivory towers in the restrictive ways as well, because not all of them are flexible and all the rest of it. And the statistics do show, PwC again did a report that said we're confident that by 2025, 20% of the working population will be self-employed. Mm. Now, if that is the case, whether it's out of choice that they're leaving, or they're shoved, or they're people in their 50s, because we've got the reports that show that, you know, if people have come out of the armed forces and all the rest of it and they can't get work in corporates, they do need to do something and they want to feel fulfilled as well. So if you can actually help them get off the ground, that's why we're doing what we're doing with Lisa, with a lot of the commercial tools as well, because, you know, you need to make it easy for them, because they're not going to find £20,000 or £30,000 for their legal costs or legal needs at the early stage of a startup. It's just not going to happen. So if we can help create those tools that give them that leg up, the chances of their success, rather than one in four or one in five going to the wall within the first 2 or 3 years, they're actually going to actually succeed and get through that barrier as such. So, you know, I'm quite confident that this can only be a good thing in a way. The other side saying that is that there's a lot of reports and you know, the statistics vacillate enormously, where they say, you know, blue collar and white collar workers within the next 10, 15, 20 years, as many as 40 to 80% aren't going to be working. Mm. Okay. Now, yeah, that may come to pass. But if that's the case, yes, it's going to be the haves and the have-nots, and then the UBI situation, universal basic income. And Finland is halfway through its trial now of UBI, and it seems to be going well, apparently. I read a report only a week or so ago, and it did prove that the people that were given a basic income, and this is not like getting job seekers allowance or what we have as in a benefit state here in the UK, this is a significant more amount of money that's beyond the poor level, that gives their population, the amount of money that actually makes them feel fulfilled. And I'll give you an example. One gentleman, he's an artist, and he said, I'm using this money because I've been given a new lease of life, because I'm not made to feel poor as if I'm a criminal even, because I'm poor and I'm not contributing to society. So I can now create these wooden ornaments, and I'm going to be like the art Airbnb. So I'm art B&B, and I'm only starting small, but I have great vision now because it's given me a new lease of life, and I'm excited about things I can actually do. So that's an example of a new entrepreneur that's being elevated by thinking about how do you make people feel welcome and embraced in society. If you don't have a job is in meaning sat under a big corporate. You know, we can all contribute in our own way, and it is about feeling fulfilled, actually. So as I say to a lot of people that I go, and I still do talks and speaking engagements on this subject, and I say, look, we're all in this together. It's mankind. Mm. So whatever's going to come out of it, governments are looking at their tax structures and all the rest of it. And I always say, look, if people want to say, look, Lisa's a bad thing because it's a robot lawyer and you're not employing people, well, in a way we are, because we are contracted with agencies who are doing a service as part of that. But if it comes to pass that I think that it should be regulated, yes, it wouldn't be regulated like law and law firm, but there should be some kind of code of conduct or ethics where it's transparent for people to understand. And if so, a different tax bracket. There's no reason why companies like mine wouldn't agree to it, or would have to fall into line and say, absolutely, if we're not paying national insurance for human beings that are employed here, we would quite happily fall into a different tax bracket, so it goes back into the system that does support some form of UBI. Mm. Absolutely.
Excellent. And a few quick-fire questions just to round us off. Apart from Lisa, what is your favourite current AI-enabled product?
Do you mean in my personal life or professional life?
Either. Your ultimate.
My ultimate at the moment. Nothing too outrageous, actually. The AI that you have in a car, you know, talking to you to get directions, basic things that stops arguments in the car, basically, that I would normally have with my husband or whatever. You know, it's just amazing that you can get to where you get to. And even just a basic, you know, finding your way around London that I use in my apps. So AIs that are rudimentary apps, I just find they're all, you know, hugely helpful. It saves a lot of time. So, you know, nothing outrageous or bizarre. I've always wanted to actually trial some of the VR headsets, but I haven't got around to that yet. That's not really AI, but it is about stepping into that new world or different world or imaginary world or what have you. And going far beyond that, people always say it's not AI, but the kind of technology that's going to be used to get man to Mars, that kind of thing. I'm totally fascinated with all that kind of happenings that are going on right now. So the high-end Project Valkyrie robots and all that palaver.
So if Elon Musk is listening and wants to give you a ride on SpaceX,
oh, absolutely, yeah. I'll write a report on it after it and all that kind of thing. Yeah, absolutely.
and now you're obviously very well read. Is there any sort of books out there that you would recommend to anyone, be they entrepreneur or interested in tech, or just a life guide?
Well, you know what? This is a book that I read when I was a teenager, and it's called The Empty Raincoat by Charles Handy, because 30-odd years ago, he wrote a book that was all about having a portfolio of skills and a handbag of skills. And that is a life's lesson, because that is the way that we're probably going to work. You know, as people do that now. They maybe have two or three different roles or jobs. You know, there might be a taxi driver, they might work in a cafe during the day as well, and they might do walking dogs, for example. So, you know, that's the kind of portfolio working. And the other extreme to that is obviously if you've got a job in a corporate, but then you're also trading clothes on eBay at the weekend, that kind of thing. But it's looking at us as our roles of how we fit into a collaborative network of skills, dropping into different projects and different environments using those skill sets, and actually being paid for that, not for an actual title, if that makes sense. So that book is particularly profound in that regard. I've been reading a book at the moment called Titans. So, you know, that's one as well, because it's an easy read, because you can dip in and out of it, of examples of how big corporates have got to where they've got to and all the rest of it. And it's a good book in the ways of thinking, if you want to be the next Amazon or the next Steve Jobs or Bill Gates or whatever, which is possibly unlikely, because I think there's going to be a big shift in, you know, how society views big corporate and how that's all going to be managed. But that's particularly, it's interesting to understand those kind of mechanisms as well.
That's Tim Ferriss, isn't it?
Yes, yeah, absolutely. So those kind of books are fantastic.
He does a podcast almost as good as this, but not
quite. No, definitely not, Sam. You're the queen of podcasts, without a doubt. And I think from that, I read quite a mix. I mean, the futuristic books, I've read a lot of Ray Kurzweil, you know, when the singularity is near, when humans transcend biology. So to understand where we're heading in the next 30 years, well, not even that, 20 years. So those kind of books about understanding the coming together of nanotechnology, robotics and genetics, you know, three major sciences that are shifting mankind towards the singularity where basically machines will be a billion times more intelligent than us. Quite frightening, but, you know, we're getting to a point where it could be utopia or dystopia. So those kind of books that get you thinking about, okay, because of that, there's some big real problems ahead of us. So how can we be part of the solution? You know, and I guess part of my passion and journey and mission, what I'm doing now, is all about that. It's about future-proofing individual careers that in turn future-proofs companies or businesses, which in turn should future-proof local economies, regional economies. And then the bigger picture is obviously about society at large and mankind and how we actually make that transition.
Great. And if people want to find out about Lisa, where should they go?
Robotlawyerlisa.com. Everything's on there. Absolutely everything. The tools are on there. Media is on there. Some videos about how these products work as well. Contacts for barristers and solicitors as well. Just everything's on there.
Chrissy, I've absolutely loved this chat. I wish I needed Lisa for something. I'll try and find a way. Thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you very much, Sam.
And we're still laughing at my inability to know words despite being deputy editor of VG.
I'm still laughing. I mean, because obviously 45 minutes listening through to that, well, people might well have forgotten the acronym and acronym saga, but we haven't.
But thanks for bringing it back up.
It's too good. It's just too good.
So we finished there, actually, with Chrissy on just getting some ideas from her on what her favourite AI is, apart from Lisa. And stop laughing at me.
I'm so sorry.
I'm so rude.
Well, no, I'm sorry.
And the books that she recommends, you know, she's a serial entrepreneur, and some great ones in there. And apologies to Tim Ferriss for saying that this podcast was better than yours, Tim, which clearly it isn't, because you know words. So this week as well, you get us not just once, but twice. So we'll close up today's podcast for you shortly, but do keep an ear out for a special Tech Talk radio podcast, which will feature all of our six shortlisted firms for the Tech Talk Academy. So on EGI this week, we'll be running little featurettes on each of those. So if you can't make it to the event, or if you want to come to the event and know a little bit more about those that are going to be standing on the stage in front of you, then do read those or listen in to our interviews with them. You know where to get us. We're on estatesgazette.podbean.com.
I still can't get that out of my head. I'm sorry. An acronym.
Oh, shut up and fall asleep on your microphone.